Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw.
I think I still hear boos for Logan Paul, Robert, but I promised my son that I would clear this up. Is Logan Paul a renowned MMA fighter or specialist? I can't remember what Corey Graves' specific wording was. Where does Logan Paul fall among today's, we won't say all time, but today's all-time great?
I guess he's more in the boxing world, so
yeah.
he's not quite mixing his martial arts yet. He's still mastering a single discipline before he really puts himself out there in the ultimate proving ground. His brother, though, is going up against a pseudo MMA legend this weekend, so you know it's not completely as off as it might sound.
Yeah. What do you make of the crowd reaction? That would be tried to get Logan Paul, or Paul, is it Paul Logan or Logan Paul?
I think it's Logan Paul.
I take great joy in not knowing that for sure. And what do you make of the idea of that, the great effort they made to get him cheered, and the crowd just would have none of it, and it sort of got in the way of the Miz and Morrison angle, with Miz trying to be the heel, but the crowd kind of reluctantly siding with Miz over Logan Paul.
Yeah, it was awkward in a lot of ways, just because I don't know if they didn't anticipate that reaction. I don't know if they thought, hey, we have a big star here. People are just going to be into him no matter what. But I mean, you're in California too, so you know, there is probably an acute awareness of Logan Paul and his shtick. So I think that really complicated things. And then even as it progressed forward into the Miz and Morrison thing, the heel face dynamic was pretty confusing even with that. And I think the Paul thing made it worse. Also, I think we see there's a difference between a wrestler getting heel heat versus a celebrity that the crowd doesn't like. And it's received differently by the wrestlers, and it's fed back differently to the crowd. And that was on full display in that segment.
Boy, was it ever. I mean, I'm not saying it was quite Roman Reigns after WrestleMania heat, but Logan, because at the beginning, Logan is like, I know, hi, and he's trying to be like cool about it. I know you don't love me yet, but I love all of you in WWE. I'm happy for the invite. I'm happy to test the waters again. It's good. Like, he was trying to navigate the hostility towards him on live TV. I mean, I almost had sympathy for him.
I had sympathy for him. I did. Because he's not a pro wrestler. Like, you know, there's a way I think a pro wrestler would know how to deal with that and be able to make it work. We've seen plenty of John Cena's getting booed over the years, and he can kind of use it to his advantage. It felt uncomfortable for him. It felt like, you know, he was a little bit taking it back. So maybe WWE isn't as tone deaf as we're probably making him sound, because even he was a little taken back by that. And that's different. I mean, it's different than when you're getting just, you know, all these nasty comments probably on YouTube. That's a little bit different than a bunch of people in a small building that are basically telling you to go away.
Or worse. Yes, very much so. Since we're on the topic, we did have the breakup of, I think, as Corey Graves and I think the other announcers sort of agreed, one of the greatest tag teams of all time,
yes.
Miz and Morrison. Yes. Morrison actually getting, like, I'd say 77% serious in his promo for next week's Miz Morrison match. He tried to keep a straight face. He almost pulled it off during his promo. He's always sort of got a smirk and an inside joke he's telling himself, it seems like. But, yeah, I mean, he called Miz a no-good son of a bitch or something, or a backstabbing son of a bitch, I think. So, I don't know. I mean, what do you think of the breakup? Is it smart? And are they both going to come out of this, like, better once their feud is over? Or is there not a lot left if they're not with each other for both of them?
Well, I think better is probably a pretty relative term here, because I don't know what the ceiling remains for each of these guys that are in their late 30s, if not already hitting 40 at this point.
Yeah, more than 41.
Right. Most 41-year-old guys look like that. That makes sense. I do think they needed to separate, though, because the Miz was on a decline for a little while before Morrison got there. That there was the confusing face run and the Shane McMahon stuff that really kind of killed the momentum that he had a couple of years ago. And the pairing with Morrison completely killed the momentum that he had. It just, anything you didn't like about the Miz, whether it's heel or face, was turned up to 11 since Morrison has gotten back. And I don't think they've really been able to maximize what they could have had with Morrison because it's just been the shtick with the Miz. So I don't know if their feud is going to be any good, but I think the end result of them not being together probably is a net positive for both individuals.
All right, very good. Well, let's pause here, introduce ourselves, and then get on with the rest of the show. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Monday, August 23rd, 2021. I'm Wade Keller, the host of the program, the host of the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Shows and Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcasts, along with a number of VIP exclusive shows, including Everything with Rich and Wade. This Sunday, Rich and I spent about an hour talking about CM Punk and the fallout from Punk's appearance on Rampage on Friday, a very newsworthy weekend in so many different ways. Also, I hosted the post-SummerSlam roundtable with Rich Van and Todd Martin on Saturday night. We went over an hour and just had a blast sharing some laughs and analyzing the show in depth. So if you're not a VIP member, this is a great time to become a VIP. You can pay through PayPal, Patreon, credit card or debit card, express sign-up form, single-click subscribing to Apple Podcasts. You'll get a confirmation email. Click the link. Boom, you're in with our ad-free VIP feed with the option to add other feeds that are show specific or specific and theme specific too in terms of nostalgia shows versus current shows. It's easier than ever to enjoy VIP benefits. And of course you get access to our ad-free VIP website. You unlock 30 plus years of archives, hundreds of retro radio shows from the 90s, new back issues every month of the Wrestling Forum newsletter from the, right now we're in 1987. It's in the pre-torch years. It's fascinating and fun reading through those when I post them. So lots of cool reasons to go VIP if you're not, but you're excited about wrestling right now. So are we. We're excited to cover it. And if you enjoy our approach to podcasting and covering the business and like our tone and the variety of perspectives and experience and all that good stuff, support us and we'll give you a lot in return. PWTorch.com/goVIP. You can actually get a Patreon support level of just $4.99 a month to get our free shows with the ads and plugs removed, which includes my co-host show today, Robert Vios of the MMA Talk for Pro Wrestling Fans, PW Torch Daily Cast. Robert, welcome to the co-host chair. Good to talk to you again.
Great to be on, Wade. It was really my dream to come on this show and talk about Logan Paul to kick things off. It's really how I envisioned the night going.
I did warn you in our 22nd production meeting that that was coming. So you had about a minute while we got logged in and started here to prepare for a high-pressure situation such as that.
That was enough time.
Awesome. Tell people about today's show. What's on MMA Talk for Pro Wrestling Fans today? Because that just went up tonight.
Right. It's probably one of our lightest MMA shows because Rick Monty and myself, I think we're both distracted by pro wrestling this weekend. So we hit the MMA. Like, we make sure we cover our base. We talked about the UFC show that just happened with Jared Cannonier and Calvin Gastelum. We gave a little bit of a preview of next week's show with Giga and Edson Barbosa. I'm struggling to remember the main eventers. But we really just kind of spent time on the three major reappearances over the weekend of CM Punk, Becky Lynch, and Brock Lesnar, which we justified it. Two of those are technically MMA fighters. So
totally.
We stayed within our lane. And Becky and Conor McGregor are always tweeting back and forth at each other. So we'll keep that in our zone. But more of a wrestling-heavy show today, but I think we still kept our same tone and style that we normally have week after week.
Good to have Rick back too. A good week to stray off into pro wrestlers who dabbled or more than dabbled in MMA or just feud with people online in MMA.
Well, he's a podcaster that dabbled in filming Super Troopers. So Reno 911. I've got the show wrong that he was on, but yes, that's what he was doing the last couple of weeks.
So if you want to get our free daily shows that I don't host to get a variety of other perspectives and voices, you want to subscribe to the PW Torch Daily Cast. Just search PW Torch in your podcast app. Those shows are all free. Again, they go ad-free. A streamlined listening experience is one of the benefits of supporting us on Patreon or becoming a full VIP member. So obviously we encourage you to go VIP, but check them out for free at just search PW Torch, or you can check out the main website, pwtorchdailycast.com, to see the lineup. That includes, by the way, last night's PWT Talks NXT crew getting together to review NXT TakeOver 36, and it also includes Greg Parks hosting the SummerSlam post show with live callers and three on-site correspondents on Saturday night. So a real big weekend on the Daily Cast lineup. You're missing a lot if you're not downloading those shows every day. We've got shows dedicated to AEW and Ring of Honor also, and some cool flashback shows that we put up every Friday. So check that out. It's free. Search PW Torch and subscribe. Okay, let's give out the phone numbers because we got a lot to talk about on tonight's show, including a record-breaking, shocking three matches announced ahead of time for next week's Raw. We can actually, you know, Frank Pediani is so frustrated because WWE often doesn't release any matches for him to analyze in his Raw primers and SmackDown primers that he writes up for PWTorch.com. He's on break this week, so of course it makes sense that they'd announce matches ahead of time and not give him a chance to enjoy that. But we'll get into actually previewing next week's Raw for once with some angles on this show to set that up. I think that's a good move, Robert. I hope it's a thing they continue to do, to do what they watch. Hopefully people are in WWE are watching Dynamite do that, AEW do that for Rampage and Dynamite, announcing matches ahead of time, not just 2 hours beforehand on social media.
Absolutely. It gives you incentive to watch. I mean, you know, when I know what's happening on Dynamite, it kind of puts it up in my brain a little further up on the priority list. The thing about it is they got to follow through on it. I think you had Kevin Eck on years ago who said Vince will just say sometimes, well, we lied about promoting something, and that just creates bad will. And you know, then you don't care about these things when they're announced. So I'm glad they're doing that. I hope they actually follow through with these things and they all don't just turn into tag matches and triple threats and all that good stuff.
We're just going to pretend that isn't possible and promote it because, yeah, you put a dark cloud over my optimism. But you're right. I mean, Vince could totally change his mind unless they're like pre-taping Raw tomorrow. Then they don't have any time, but they're not. I don't think they're doing that. So
no.
Back in the day, they would announce like NXT will be able to announce matches ahead of time when they start taping shows. That's a whole other topic. Rich Fan and I talked about that on the VIP podcast, Everything, yesterday on WWE exec Nick Khan's harsh and blunt comments about NXT and the indie guys era being over, and we're going to recruit our own super athletes and train them, and you'll want to watch them, and we wish there's 8 hours around SmackDown each week. Just, man, the humiliation of Triple H's project continues with Nick Khan coming in. You can do a reality series on like, or not a reality, but a drama, scripted drama like Showtime or HBO on the Triple H Vince McMahon dynamic alone over the last dozen years.
Oh, Nick Khan's the perfect like minor character in the first two seasons that suddenly rebuilds himself as the main villain. Yeah, he's perfect in that role.
Totally, he is right out of central casting. That Ariel Helwani interview is something else. All right, so our phone number, if you want to chat with about Raw with us tonight, is 347-215-8558. 347-215-8558. When you call, you have to push 1 on your keypad, or we don't know you want to be on the show. A bunch of people just call in and listen, which is great. But when you push 1, that flags you on our switchboard, and then we'll bring you on. So don't forget to do that. And if it's better for you and easy for you, you can email us instead, wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. I hadn't looked at our inbox yet. It's pretty light. So if you want to get an email in and you're listening live, you can definitely do that. And that also works well if you can't listen to the live stream that we do after Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown. Then you can still participate in the show even if you can't listen live by sending that email in. And as always, you can find our live stream after Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown. We start about 5 minutes after the show's end, 5, 6, 7, 8 minutes afterwards. You can find the link on Twitter at PWTorch. You can also find the link at the top and bottom of my TV coverage, my TV show coverage of Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown at PWTorch.com. And you can also just go to WadeKellerPostShow.com and click on the link to the live stream. So lots of ways to find us. But of course, most of you listen by downloading the show at a more convenient time. And that works very well too. All right. So let's get to it. And we will begin with, we'll start with Greg in Kansas City today. Greg, thanks for calling. What stood out on Raw for you tonight?
I'll start with the positives. There were a few positives.
I
don't know if Priest versus Lashley is the right way to go, but it's nice that WWE actually seems to be, you know, of course you've talked about Wade, your opinions on whether or not he's ready for this top spot or not, but a potential top spot. But I mean, I like that they're actually seem to be going as far as WWE tends to go with trying to build a new star in Damian Priest. So I like that, and it does appear that even though Drew was involved, definitely the direction seems to be Bobby Lashley and Damian Priest, just based on everything from the interactions to the post-match stare down and all that. The Orton Riddle stuff is good as usual, and I liked Nikki Cross and I like Nikki and Rhea Ripley as a tag team. I wasn't really all that bothered by it, although they are continuing to stretch out this breakup story. And then my other observation on the show, and then I'll add something else after you guys talk, is that to me, I noticed that there's just so many people there who you want to get invested in. Like, you know, maybe you could get invested in John Morrison, right, if he comes out of a Miz feud looking strong. But, like, ultimately, you're almost, like, trained by this company to, like, not have any reason to get invested in somebody like that. And also then the biggest negative of the show had to be the treatment of Ricochet. I mean, I don't say this all the time about people, but he needs to get out of WWE whenever he can. I mean, it's just like he has this excellent performance at Money in the Bank. I'm not talking about putting him in, like, the world title picture or anything, but, I mean, he does that. He gets zero reward for it on television in any way, shape, or form. And then he goes out and loses like that in under a minute. I thought that was really really sad to see. So a few positives, but it's the same thing we talk about every week with Raw, where it's just a show, and there's nothing overly exciting going on. It just seems to be there most weeks. And so today, this week was another example of that, and the Ricochet thing was really unfortunate to see.
Yeah, so let's hit on a few of those things. One, I do think there were more positives on the show for no other reason. It's post-SummerSlam, and we got some fresh matchups. Rhea Ripley seems to be cast properly as a babyface. We get a mini RK-Bro type odd couple tag team with Nikki and Ripley. You know, the Alexa Bliss Charlotte thing, I mean, I'm intrigued by it. I'm a fan of Alexa Bliss. I am not a fan of this gimmick, and it just feels sort of derivative and half-hearted and left over from the Fiend era. But that said, it's something fresh for Charlotte. And so I'll take that. And Bliss is usually makes the best of a situation that she's put in. And so that worked. I like setting up Sheamus and Lashley as a match next week while building or planting the seed for Damian Priest and Lashley, probably in a bigger setting on a pay-per-view for the title. I didn't have a big problem with them giving away only a couple of minutes of them in that impromptu one-on-one match because they didn't advertise it ahead of time. And they did give us, you know, those two in a tag match afterwards that lasted about 15 minutes and was hard hitting and good. So I feel like, you know, they get a pass on that because it is TV. And I think I'd have been more upset if they actually gave away a full-fledged pre-Lashley match with no notice. So yeah, those are just a few things that were good. And I'm with you on Ricochet. You know, I'd like to think this means Ricochet has turned down a contract extension and he's, you know, rumors are, or Vince McMahon heard he's wants to go to AEW. And so they're burying him. I'd like to think that's why, but I think they just did it because they don't think Ricochet's worth more than this. And I don't think Ricochet fits as a well-rounded top guy in terms of checking the boxes of what WWE looks for. But that said, you know, WWE should be getting much, much more out of him. And if you give him that confidence and give fans a reason to get behind him, maybe he steps up and maybe there's sort of an organic better promo that comes out of not feeling like he's undervalued and just, as CM Punk said Friday, just waiting to be ridiculed for making a mistake out there. So, you know, this was a burial. And then we haven't even brought up, and I'm sure some people are like, how can they not talk about this yet? Karrion Kross's new, whatever that was, suspenders, ex-suspenders. Robert, how would you describe this to somebody? It's not a flattering look for Karrion Kross, who he's one of those guys who can be a black trunks, black boots guy and look good. Like that was his like one positive trait is just looking good without a bunch of, you know, stuff like Steve Austin could. And now they've kind of screwed that up by adding a layer of this weirdness to him.
That's actually what bothers me most about the Ricochet thing is at this point, I don't know if Karrion Kross is worth losing to in under 2 minutes. Karrion Kross is such a weird deal right now. That thing, it doesn't make him look intimidating or like he's a gladiator. So it makes him look like, you know, an extra on a bad movie or something.
I thought NXT did to Andrade.
Yes.
Like, I know. You want to give him something extra, but this actually is a negative. It's taking something away. Sometimes less is more, and sometimes more is awful.
it's distracting from what you're in theory trying to present. So I thought, you know, I think we talked about it the first time when he lost to Jeff Hardy, which is still not aging very well in a lot of ways. I don't know if they are particularly trying to sabotage him, which I think mine and your opinion both is, well, I mean, you only have so much to work with as he's there. But I mean, again, guy was pretty prominent spot fairly recently. So it's not a good idea to, you know, make the guy lose and then make the guy just look ridiculous. And I know the accoutrements were part of the presentation. But they got to be good ones. They can't be like this. And I think, again, I think this all circles back to the earlier topic of the Ricochet thing of, you know, Ricochet is losing to this guy that's, you know, cosplaying as something, and it's all that just does not work.
Greg, I'll throw back to you. You covered a lot. Is there anything else you want us to follow up on that you brought up, or you can change topics to something else too?
I'll just say one more thing and I'll keep it quick and I won't, because it's more general as to the weekend. I thought with the and Raw fits into this, because in general I felt with the WWE with the you know, the CM Punk event, I thought this was a bad weekend to like to hurt fan goodwill, as far as like that's one of the things, criticisms of WWE for so long, as you and Rich Fan have talked about, between the, you know, between some of the decisions made at SummerSlam and the Saudi Arabia thing, and even little things like maybe even tonight, you know, somebody might go out and watch Ricochet get destroyed in a minute. And to me, I felt like this was a bad weekend with the microscope on after the Punk thing, and AEW potentially being more in like striking distance in terms of ratings or serious striking distance in terms of coming close to maybe catching WWE in some aspects of like fandom and all this, to bring more not so positive will onto yourself. And I feel like that Raw just simply being Raw, it doesn't help things. So I felt like this was and I didn't hate the SummerSlam show. I actually liked it as far as like good of Edge, Rollins, and Roman Cena. I can't call it a bad show, but there were things done that I don't think were the best for like for fan goodwill and all this. And I felt like it was a bad weekend for WWE. I didn't feel like this was the best weekend for WWE after the Punk event. And then tonight's Raw didn't really change my opinion on that.
Robert, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think tonight's Raw was one of the first times that we were really noticing it's on Monday nights, but this was a SmackDown after a pay-per-view. This wasn't a Raw after a pay-per-view, if you think about it in a more traditional sense. All the big things that happened at the pay-per-view, mm-hmm. they're all going to be followed up on Friday nights. Not a lot of them were followed up on tonight. The closest to we got the major follow-up from the pay-per-view was MVP's promo at the beginning of the night, which obviously went a couple of different directions because you're not having him there. In the context of tonight's Raw, I don't think it was the worst thing, because I thought this was a boring show, but I don't even mean that necessarily in a negative sort of tone. There was a heel turn, but there wasn't a ton of breakups and debuts and just a ton of things changing. It wasn't a complete season premiere, which it feels like SmackDown is going to be this week. So I think of all the offenses that the caller is talking about, especially in the context of this weekend, I think SummerSlam is the one that's a little more glaring than what Raw was tonight. I didn't even feel like there was actually a ton of buzz coming into Raw, because again, everything that really mattered from SummerSlam gets followed up on Friday night.
All right. Very good. Greg, any closing words?
No, thank you very much.
You bet. Thanks. Appreciate it. All right. We'll go next to, Jay in Hartford. And then we got Josh and calling us from San Diego, our on-site correspondent, up next. Jay, thanks for calling. What stood out on Raw for you tonight?
Wade, Robert, good evening. Thanks for taking my call. So, yes, sir.
Yeah, yeah.
So starting with John Morrison, real quick, I want to point out, or I'm glad that you pointed out his not-so-straight face when he cut his promo there. You know, I caught the smirk at the end of it.
Yeah.
And it was – so when he came out for his match, you know how they put the graphic up, you know, showing some sort of – I don't know what you want to call them, fun facts or something. They only pointed out that he was a six-time tag team champion. And I'm thinking, this guy is also a former Intercontinental Champion. Why wouldn't you point it out as he's coming out for a singles match? And I've noticed that those facts they put up, they leave certain things out, or sometimes they put, you know, silly things that have nothing to do with, you know, their accolades in the ring. But that just kind of stood out to me. And, you know, now that he's getting ready for possibly a singles run, you know, you would think you'd want to make mention of that. But I thought the promo was good. It's just that I did catch the smirk at the end. But moving on, what I really wanted to kind of get into a couple things real quick. RK-Bro, so I'm enjoying them. And Wade, I don't know if you remember a couple weeks ago I mentioned that, oh, now that crowds are back, I wanted to see them do the bit with the, you know, zip your mouth shut and throw away the key, and they still haven't done it since we've had
Oh, yeah,
crowds,
that's right,
which,
yeah.
Yep. Which is what endeared me to them in the first place. But the one thing that bothers me a little bit about the team is that they've been saying the last couple of weeks, like, RK-Bro is back, RK-Bro is back. And I'm thinking, but were they ever a thing? Like, to me, they were building to becoming a team and like, forming this relationship. And so this, you know, the yeah, I guess that would have been last Monday when they finally, you know, Orton says, okay, I'm in, and they hug. To me, that was, like, the first official, like, okay, RK-Bro is really a thing. But they keep painting it as RK-Bro is back together. And I'm like, well, they weren't really officially together before. It seemingly was just Orton putting up with Riddle. And eventually they got a, you know, a chance in a fatal four-way for a tag title shot. They didn't win that match, but am I the only one missing that? No, they weren't really a thing before, because they keep saying they're back together. Like, when were they together before now?
Yeah. What's the fact check on that for you, Robert?
Well, I think the bigger issue is they never really were apart. They had a one RKO between them that lasted like a week of for dissension. Like, that's different than the Shield, you know, not being a team for 3 years and then coming back and coming back. So I think it's a little bit different. I mean, your point though, it is well taken. It's tonight was more of one of the few times they've done this a couple times where it's more of the establishment of the team, even though, yes, I know they are already the tag champs, so it's a little weird. But tonight was, I think, more of the affirmation of them as a team versus them breaking up and splitting apart. So, you know, your point is well taken, but, you know, with 3 hours, there's a lot of announcer time to fill.
Yeah.
Good point.
By the way, I thought Jimmy Smith had his best night tonight.
waiting for that one.
No, I think he, like, his grinding voice was kind of, he sounded like a normal guy some of the time, and the, you know, are you kidding me, sounded like someone saying it because they felt it, not because it was in the script and he had never, you know, read the phrase in the English language before. Like, it's just, he felt, no, I'm being genuine. I think he felt more comfortable in the chair, and there's a sense that he's been, you know, watching Ron Al for a couple months. So he's a little more up on the storylines and the characters, and it allows him to relax a little more and call things a little more organically. So, I mean, I'm not saying he's great, but there's nothing really jumped out as, like, you know, taking away from my enjoyment of the show or kind of embarrassing himself. Maybe I'm just sympathetic because of that look Corey Graves gave him at SummerSlam. man, that was emasculating on the air. So anyway, I just wanted to sneak that in so I didn't forget. Give credit where it's due. Jimmy Smith didn't annoy me. How about you, Robert? Where are you on him?
I'm nowhere near as negative on Jimmy Smith as you. That's
have
your reputation. Yes. Okay, yes, yes. You're turning the corner. People can grow and people can change. Both you and Jimmy Smith are on a journey together. I generally don't notice him, but I think it's because of your exact criticism. Of he just sat, not because I'm trying to tune you out, but he just sounds like, you know, stock WWE announce, you know, you close your eyes and they all kind of sound the same. I will say this though, he's doing less of the thing that him and Coach both did in their returns where they're trying to sound like the smartest guy in the room, but it doesn't really pay off whenever the guy doesn't really know what they're talking about, and it's more of just trying to sound like the expert, which I sound like I'm doing with this really tortured point I'm trying to make. I thought this was a decent night for the commentary overall. I feel like I didn't notice the commentary nowhere near as much tonight as I generally do. And it kind of fit, I think, in general, it was a bit of a low-key night of Raw, which is a theme that we keep coming back to.
I think my highlight was when Mansoor won by DQ. And Smith and Graves are acting like this is some sort of, you know, lesson that Mansoor learned that he needs to listen to Ali. And Byron's like, but he won. He still won. And so I was like, wow, that felt like sort of a natural it was a natural reaction to the obvious, but it wasn't really working with the story that Smith and Graves are trying to get across. But I like that. I like when announcers just say what you're thinking, which is, well, what lesson can be learned? I mean, that's where one by DQ. How could listening to Ali have, you know, changed that? I didn't think it was a great angle for that reason, but I enjoyed Saxton kind of chiming in with the obvious.
Byron's had some good moments, like in the last year and a half, where he just—you could tell there's a little bit of a confidence to him when something kind of doesn't jive that the other guys are saying, and he throws it in there, and he sounds less dweeby than I think he did in the first couple of years of his run.
Yeah. All right, Jay, back to you.
Yeah, no, I appreciate you bringing up Jimmy Smith. So when I was planning to call in, I was going to ask you about him, then I kind of said, later, I won't bring it up. But since we're there, I wanted to ask you, Wade, and maybe I noticed tonight that he wasn't as bad, although I haven't really – I've been okay with him. But I know you bring up a lot his voice and that – I don't know if you want to call it growling tone or just that overly .
It's like he's straining to lift a car. Like,
exactly.
Are you kidding me?
You said that last week. I love it.
Yeah.
So I'm not familiar with his announcing prior to this his stint here at Raw. So – is that – did he not sound the same doing, like, his MMA stuff, or do you know?
We have a great co-host who can answer that.
I think that's probably why I'm less critical, not that I'm biased towards him, but I just kind of think that's how Jimmy Smith sounded, and Jimmy Smith was a very well-liked announcer within MMA. MMA announcing, though, it's a different skill set. I think MMA, because the randomness of when big moments can happen – it's one of the few sports that can end literally at any moment you're watching it. So you have to throw out the hyperbole and that inflection, which is really corny when it's taken on its own. Like, watch one of the older, like the UFC Joe Rogan promos without any context, and it just sounds ridiculous. It sounds like hucksters trying to tell you something at 2 o'clock in the morning. But in the context of what you're watching, when you're watching it, it actually works pretty well. So I would say that this is kind of what Jimmy Smith has always done. Although I think the dynamics of pro wrestling and some of the dynamics specifically of how pro wrestling announcing works in WWE with the storytelling and all that just kind of doesn't fit that cadence, nowhere nearly as well as it fits in MMA. So I think it's natural to think that an MMA announcer and a pro wrestling announcer could be a pretty good crossover. I think Mauro Ranallo probably has done the best at that, but I think it's actually a slightly different skill set, and it's appreciated in a slightly different way in each genre.
Yeah. I think that's a good differentiation to make, and part of the struggle of making the transition, because, you know, especially for Vince McMahon, when it's about telling stories and conversations and having to know what you're supposed to say and then not stepping in it because you don't know the characters or even the names of the characters well as a challenge along the way too. And Smith had, you know, has had issues adjusting because he was hired for the wrong reasons. All right, Jay, you can follow up on that or anything else.
Well, I appreciate the insight there, Robert. So thank you guys. But I'll move back to RK-Bro. You know, WWE has, in my, I guess, opinion, right? I won't say they have a problem making stars. I don't really know and what the deal is, right? I think it's been covered, you know, way with you that, you know, maybe the idea is that WWE is the star now. You know, there'll never be a Hulk Hogan or Stone Cold, even though you could argue Roman Reigns maybe that. But when it comes to building stars, like we kind of saw what happened with Bianca. I won't, you know, let's not go down that road. But at the end of the show, and the way whose music they choose to play when they, you know, during certain, you know, moments, whatever, has always been a thing that's bothered me. Riddle won the match. His music played as it should have, and I'm like, yay, rah rah, all right, it's going off the air, great moment. Then Randy Orton has to come in and get the RKO, and then his music has to play, and that bothered me so much, because not doing that would not have made Orton any less of a star, whereas allowing Riddle to get that moment, he got the win, we go off the air with his music playing, to me builds him up even more, as opposed, like, what does Orton have to, you know, we're not building him. Like, and he wouldn't be any less Randy Orton by having not gotten in that last RKO. The crowd was happy. You know, we were good. The win was good enough. So it's just, why couldn't we have gone off the air with Riddle's music? And I'm not the biggest Riddle fan, but again, RK-Bro has brought me around to him. It's just like, you guys want to make new stars or don't you? You want to keep Orton's a star. He's there and he's not going to get any higher, right? So I just don't know if that bothered anyone. Like, it bothered me, but I felt like we could have just went off the air with Riddle's music and not, you know, had to like give Orton that spotlight at the end there. What do you think?
Yeah, Robert, what's your thought on that?
Yeah, I don't think it's a big problem that we have to, you know, that you would need to address immediately. I think it is symptomatic of WWE likes to do what's comfortable to them. And, you know, Orton hitting the RKO and that music, that theme song that he's had for over a decade, it is what's comfortable. It feels like WWE. It looks like WWE. And while, you know, they do have ownership of Riddle and his song, it's a little less familiar. And I don't know if that necessarily a conscious decision of a way to keep Orton above Riddle at this point, but I do think it's just the classic case of doing what's comfortable and doing what you know.
Very good. Jay, any closing words from you?
Yes, sir. I'll bring up one other topic, and I'll let you get to your on-site correspondent. Elias.
Yes.
His promo or his vignette kind of jumped out at me tonight, and I'm very intrigued. But what stood out to me that I think was different, perhaps I've missed it, previously he said Elias is dead in previous vignettes.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, are they going with a name change, which I didn't like that idea. I'm like, I'm going to look at him, I'm going to see Elias. You can just change his, you know, attitude or something without changing his name. Tonight, he actually said the old Elias is dead, as opposed to just saying Elias is dead, which now makes me think he's going to keep the name, and I'm like, phew. You know, but so I don't know if that jumped out at you guys, and I mean, I don't know where – It, the hat, though, when he threw the hat on, I'm like, ah, he still kind of resembles a musician. So I don't know. Like, maybe he didn't need the hat, but, you know, I'll end with that one way.
Yeah, good. I'm glad you brought that up, Jay. I am intrigued like you are where they're going. Thanks for the call, Jay. Robert, I picked up as Jay did. Elias is dead. The old Elias is dead. They're like, whoa, okay, you know. Old Elias. So there's a new Elias, but Elias isn't dead. Old Elias is dead, but there's a new Elias, even though there's a gravestone that says Elias is dead. So I'm a little confused. I don't know if they were like trying to trademark a new name and it didn't work. And they're like, what are we going to do? Well, let's just keep him Elias then or something. I don't know. It does feel weird. And I'm not sure what to make of him saying, you know, he's mastered being an entertainer and now he wants to master being a wrestler. I mean, I can see a lot of people doing that gimmick for, but maybe the wrestler who has this side of Omos, the biggest differentiation between his push and his actual in-ring aptitude. Like, there's a big difference between those two things. Elias is a clunky wrestler who has earned his keep because of his guitar playing and gimmick. That's why I'm intrigued, because I thought Vince kept him around because of Walk with Elias and playing the guitar, and you're like taking the things away from him. And now he's saying in a vignette, yeah, I want to now master wrestling. Well, I'm like, well, okay, maybe you need to substitute more than a name. You need to, you know, go learn to wrestle better or become better athletically. But I mean, he's had moments where he's been okay, but most matches it's like clunky and not pleasant. So that adds to why I'm intrigued. Like the idea that now he's going to be the wrestler's wrestler. It's like, really? That's what you're doing with this guy? Robert, your take.
Yeah, the one idea I had from it, because that was what stood out for me, was the actual phrase wrestler and wrestling in the context of this weekend. I think it sticks out even a little bit further.
Yeah.
I got a feeling there may be some leaning into just how unspectacular he is as a wrestler. That's my prediction, and that's going to be the heel shtick of, instead of being the, you know, the kooky musician guy that insults the crowd, he's this, you know, uber serious wrestler that's taking himself too seriously. That's kind of the vibe I got from it. I don't know how successful that will be, because I think generally those characters have to actually be good wrestlers in order to get that over, and I don't know that Elias quite fits the bill. I think Baron Corbin somehow has surpassed Elias in their race to the bottom. Baron Corbin has pulled a few steps ahead, so we're in a interesting territory with him, to say the least, right now.
Yes, we are. All right. let's shift to our on-site correspondent, Josh in San Diego. I do want to let people know we have right now in our calendar of on-site correspondents a bit of a gap in having people lined up. We've had a good stretch here of on-site correspondents just about every week since they've been back in front of crowds. But we need, looking at the thing here, we've got Wednesday Milwaukee for AEW, and we've got someone for North Little Rock on Friday for SmackDown. We've got Oklahoma City for Raw on Monday, and Huffman Estates, we've got someone. But then that's when the gap kicks in, I guess, in September. September 3rd, Jacksonville, SmackDown, we're still looking for someone. And then Raw in Miami, we need someone. And we still don't have anyone from for New York MSG for SmackDown on the 10th, or Boston for Raw on September 13th. So there are some openings here if you want to be an on-site correspondent. So email wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. You can let me know if you just want to be an emergency backup. You're there if we need you. Or if you just want to be, you know, you're raising your hand eagerly and you want to help out, that works too. wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. As I always ask, put the name of the city in somewhere in the email or the subject line, because I search our busy inbox for the city when I'm trying to, you know, confirm people. So that's really helpful. Otherwise, there's a chance you slip under the radar. Okay, so with that said, let's get to Josh in San Diego, tonight's on-site correspondent. Josh, welcome to the show.
Good evening, guys. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you. Let's ask some of the basic stuff first. How full was the building tonight as far as the seats in the building? Like, how much was tarped off? How many seats behind the hard camera were empty? It looked full from the camera angles they chose, like a good crowd.
Yeah, you're pretty spot on with a pretty good crowd tonight. The lower bowl was completely full, hard camera side, other side, completely around. All seats were full on the lower bowl. The top part, about a third full. All in all, it's a pretty small venue. You know, it's not a typical Staples Center or something large in the state of California. So it's a pretty small venue. I actually had a chance to talk to the box office, and they informed me that just over 6,000 were in attendance tonight.
Yeah, I didn't see any luxury suites in the middle, so it looked like a smaller venue. But they used some good camera angles to make it look like, you know, a major arena. It had a good look to it based on what they shot. But, yeah, I could tell there was one point when they were shooting at an angle up towards the upper deck, and you could see where the fans ended and the lighting got dark. And it didn't look like the upper deck at least wrapped all the way around. So, very good.
No, I was just going to say that, you know, the crowd seemed super engaged tonight from the start, and really never fell asleep for all 3 hours, which was nice.
What do you think of the show as far as do you think that was a product of just a crowd that was, you know, just into the product, or do you think WWE in particular did a good job moving the show along?
I think a little of both. For me personally, I've been trying to figure that out since the show ended. There is something to be said about being back. This is my first time back at a live show since the pandemic. And I think people were just happy to be back at a live show. You know, at the same time, I think WWE did a decent job tonight. You know, now we're going to throw SmackDown out of the equation. We're just going to compare this to recent Raws. And recent Raw-wise, you know, I thought it was a pretty decent show. You know, coming out of SummerSlam, there should be a lot to work with, you know, with celebrating the accomplishments from last night and starting new storylines. Obviously, most of the accomplishments from last night came from the SmackDown side, and Raw doesn't have a lot to work with. But I thought all in all, you know, comparing this show to Gone Live for Raw, I thought it was better than usual.
One more question for you, and then I'll throw to Robert for some questions. Who just seemed like the stars of the show? Like, if you were not a wrestling fan or just weren't looking, who didn't know any backstory, who would the story be that were the most popular or the wrestlers getting the biggest reactions of the night?
Yeah, biggest reactions of the night. I'll tell you, McIntyre's still getting a big pop. Him holding down the whole pandemic era, with no fans and coming out of that, the reaction when his music hit in that opening segment was pretty electric. The crowd's also behind Riddle. Regarding Charlotte and Randy Orton, people usually, most of the people got on their feet. It almost seemed like, and some were cheering, it almost seemed like with Charlotte and Randy, they wanted to get a picture of like a future Hall of Famer. Like they were kind of, it was more of a historic moment than a just a huge pop because they've been doing great things. They like the storylines that Charlotte and Randy are part of. But Riddle and McIntyre.
Was there anyone in particular who wasn't over where it was just like that the crowd that was generous and excited to be there withdrew or subsided a bit?
Say it again, Wade.
Was there anyone who just didn't get a reaction? You know, like where the crowd was good, was willing to cheer for you, but in this case, they just were disengaged.
You know, face wise, I can't really think of any. Match wise, obviously the gender match and you know the even you know what here's one for you. Maybe Karrion Kross. You know, I don't know what WWE is. I know you guys have crossed. Yeah, that is. And that was a question I was going to bring up to you before we're done tonight. Karrion Kross, not you know, you hear out of some outlets, you hear that Vince and the boys really want to give him a huge push and he could be the next thing. And then other outlets just don't think it's going to work. Yeah, it was pretty.
What do you think of his presence being in the building? Did he have? I mean, a lot of like you talk about Charlotte, you know, like there's just a response for Drew McIntyre. They've got a head start, so you know, in fairness. But did Kross have a presence that commanded the fans' attention in the building?
No, absolutely not. Now he did come out, and then they immediately went to commercial break. Some of those commercial breaks take the air out of the building very quick, as you probably know. So that did not help him. By the time the lights came back up and he got back on the air, any chance that he had had evaporated. But no, when he came out, it was pretty lackluster. He did not have a presence, and I know what you mean by that. I liked the mask. I didn't mind the mask. I actually liked it. I don't know what he was wearing on his chest, those straps or belt buckles or whatever that was, but I didn't mind the math. Good now, right?
Yeah. I think that's a real safe assumption.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not 100% confirmed, but I mean that, yeah, I mean, I don't expect him on NXT tomorrow or again.
Right. And before you throw me to Robert for any questions, if you don't mind, regarding that Karrion Kross Ricochet match, and this is been bugging me for quite some time. I wanted to get your thoughts on, if you had to look into a crystal ball, what do you think Karrion Kross, what do you think is going to happen over the next couple years? And also, the thing that's been bugging me a lot lately, a lot on Raw, even on SmackDown sometimes, you know, how does the Kross-Ricochet match help anybody? Ricochet has disappeared with no good wins lately. Ricochet has no significance if Karrion Kross destroys them. It doesn't make Karrion Kross look good, and it just buries Ricochet more and more. So it doesn't help either talent, and I'm not a genius and I'm not a writer, but it just doesn't seem to make sense. You're not elevating either athlete.
No, I was thinking of so many wrestlers who were cut who could have done exactly that, and Kross could have looked dominant, you know, keep people on board. And either member of Ever-Rise, you know, 2.0 could have been in that spot. Take great, be obnoxious in some vignette, pound their chest, talk it in a delusional big game, and then Kross just kills them, you know. And of course, that's if Kross, you know, I guess that frames Kross more as a babyface than they want. But you know, my point is, there's people out there you can put in that spot, and they're sympathetic, and they take a beating, and you don't have the resentment factor. A resentment factor that money, a resentment factor that makes people hate WWE for how they mistreat talented wrestlers they like. And so they're getting the wrong kind of heat with that. And yeah, it's a bad call. I think Kross, because he's not super big, has a chance to flame out. Once Vince sees him, and they're like, Priest was just like, whoa, he's towering over Lashley. That makes an impression on Vince McMahon. When Kross is standing out there opposite of Drew McIntyre, Vince can be like, oh, I don't know about this. And so then Cross has to be good at other things. And I just don't know what other things he's good at to make up for the fact that his gimmick is he's 6'6", but he's 6'1". So, you know, they bill him taller than that, but you know, he's around that. And so, yeah, I think he'll probably get a chance to feud with, you know, Orton or Riddle or Drew or something like that. But I don't see him main eventing a significant pay-per-view unless it's, I could see him getting a world title shot if it's like the third or fourth biggest match on a non-marquee pay-per-view. And then that'll sort of be, you know, the peak of his run. I hope he improves. I hope he fits in better there, but they've taken some things away from his act and got off to a really rough start. Robert, how about you?
Yeah, I agree with almost everything you say. And I think that's why, like, the win over Ricochet, it's not like what they were trying to do with Lars Sullivan a couple of years ago before his issues crept up, where it's not like he's just mowing down people. Like, he has been already defined as such a weird, it's ambiguous if he's actually any good or not. And so the defeat over Ricochet, as you said, just does nothing for anybody. And I think, you know, we talk about this all the time, is the first impressions are so important in WWE. It's so hard to get out of however they see you initially. And I think all indications are they see something in him, but I don't think they're seeing main event dollars in him clearly, because I just don't think they would have done what they did with him right out of the gate if that's where their intention was to go with him.
Yeah. All right, Robert, what questions do you have for Josh as far as his on-site correspondence?
Yeah, I'm curious about the dynamics with Bobby. You answered the Drew thing. That's something I was going to ask you, and you saw it on Twitter, people saying, you know, he got a pretty big pop. I'm curious about the other three members that surrounded this, between not only the level of their pop, but how are they received between Sheamus, Lashley, and, of course, probably most importantly, Priest. You know, was he embraced as a babyface, or were the crowd a little lukewarm to him coming out and challenging the champion?
No, all four wrestlers were very much so. Priest came over well. McIntyre, obviously, Bobby Lashley, with what MVP said to open the show, got some really good heat, a lot of boos, more boos than I expected. Sheamus, as Wade has said, you know, it can be argued that he might have had the best past 8 months of any professional wrestler. I mean, he's putting in a lot of work. You know, that segment from opening to end with MVP doing his thing and the match taking place, I think I clocked it at either 40 or 42 minutes. And I'll tell you what, when you have four really good talents right now doing their thing, being engaged, being able to wrestle, given the time to do their thing, that was the fastest 40 or so minutes of the show by far. It was nice. It was nice seeing four great talents that are on top of their game right now in the ring together. It was refreshing, to be honest, because Raw, as we all know, has suffered in match talent.
I'm also curious, did they run any advertisements for the upcoming Saudi Arabia show? If so, how was that received in the building?
They did not. I was monitoring that too. I was curious because I know they've ran a few recently, but they did not inside the building.
Oh, cool. And then then one last thing is we've been talking about the interview with Nick Khan and Helwani throughout this podcast. So he talked about the localized merchandise that would you know, really only be available at specific to each venue. Did you see a lot of localized merch in San Diego?
I did, and I loved it. They had kind of the welcome back WWE Tour 2021 shirt with San Diego across it. I think they went with the old Padres colors, the brown and yellow, which kind of looked cool. And throughout this entire tour, as you guys might have mentioned in previous shows, they've been running with the 316 shirts for each city. So tonight they had the San Diego 316 shirts, which I love. I think it's cool, the personalized shirts. I'll tell you what, though. at least tonight, John Cena was still dominating the merch table. I actually hung out there for a while because I thought you guys might be interested. And every other shirt was going to John, and the crowd was putting those on as soon as they bought them. Still a lot of green and yellow, the shirt they've been going with, lead up to SummerSlam and hat. He's still bringing in the merch, no doubt about it.
A couple of crowd reaction questions for you, and then I'll throw back to Robert. There was a scattered Goldberg chant that just petered out. Talk about being in the building for that. If Goldberg was mega over, I think that would have caught on and been louder and lasted a while, and it seemed like people couldn't be bothered.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. You make a good point. I didn't think about it that way originally. Prior to the show, I was talking to some fans, and we were pretty convinced that it would just be Lashley showing up tonight, and we wouldn't have a Goldberg. So I just assumed the 6,000 in attendance all figured that, but probably not, because they probably don't follow this as well as some. And no, you're probably right that there wasn't a lot to get behind in regards to Goldberg. And let's just be honest. Wade, I was going to mention this to you also. I know it goes back to SummerSlam, but did you notice, or if you mentioned it, that the knee shot that MVP with his cane that he shot at Goldberg that obviously kind of starts this whole storyline of him being injured, the camera or the truck on SummerSlam when it was being aired live missed that critical shot. They said it happened, and they had to go back and show the replay of it. I can't believe they missed that shot. That's when the whole story was based on, with him having to retire from that match. Did you catch that at all?
No, I think I caught the replay because I was typing up the report. Robert, how about you? Did that show about you that something happened and they had to catch up?
No, and that's on me because I was pretty uninterested in the whole proceeding at that point, and I was tired. So
yeah,
little details, I missed them.
Yeah, they definitely have replayed it enough for us to know that happened.
They have. But that was a big that's a big moment. That was the reason that match ended.
Yeah.
I can't believe they missed that. And gosh, I can't believe this Goldberg Lashley thing is probably going to continue. What do you guys think? Will they wrap this up before? I imagine Goldberg signed on for maybe one more match. You think they'll wrap this up before Survivors, or you think it will go that long?
I mean, I hope they send him to Saudi Arabia and Damian Priest gets the Extreme Rules match, but it seems like Extreme Rules makes more sense given the nature of the Sun getting beat up and a need for revenge. I think we know what Lashley's next two matches are going to be. It's just in what order and on what show.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Josh, let me ask you about three videos and if there was a crowd reaction to any of them. Reggie, Dewdrop, and what was the third one I was going to ask about that was on a big screen? I'm kind of scrolling here trying to think about. Well, answer those two and then I'll remember the other one.
Yeah. Regarding the Dewdrop, no reaction at all. It's like it didn't even happen. And the Reggie, there was some comedic relief in the Reggie pop or the Reggie promo. I mean, to be honest with you, I think the loudest laugh was when they didn't show the trampoline and he elevated onto the ice cream truck like he was able to fly. People laughed at that. The Reggie got a little bit of a chuckle. So people were into that maybe a tad, but the Dewdrop, that's done.
Maybe I was going to ask about Elias, just if the crowd was interested in that or disinterested.
Disinterested, not paying attention at all.
Yeah. Did they pop when Baron Corbin was on the screen briefly?
They did. Yeah. Yep. They still enjoy that also.
Robert, do you want to jump in with one more question for Josh?
Yeah, we let out the show talking about the Miz Morrison and Logan Paul situation. What was the vibe? Why were you heathens just booing Logan Paul to no end over there?
That was amazing. First of all, I mean, that was maybe the highlight of the night. I mean, it's been a while since I've been in an arena and I could not hear the guy on the mic. I mean, I don't know if they were able to do some TV magic and not make it sound.
They did not.
So crazy.
We heard what you're describing.
Okay. I mean, it almost, I'm exaggerating here, but it almost reminded me of Elias and Kevin Owens up in Seattle when they referenced the basketball team.
Good comparison.
Yeah, that was classic. But the Logan Paul, and hey, I'll be the first to admit, I loved it, but you know, I'm not a maybe I'm a little older. I'm not a YouTuber. I don't follow his career that much. Do you guys know why the booze just streamed and did not stop?
Because people who see him on YouTube don't like him, and he's just. I mean, I don't know a ton about him. Last time he was around, I kind of got filled in a little bit, and I mean, it just seemed like anybody who knows much about him, it feels weird that they're trying to portray him as a babyface,
right?
Because it from my understanding of people who know more about him, he's not. The shtick is you want to see him get beat up, and so why would you try to turn a babyface? And then you also just have the sort of the Rock Band curse, which is, you know, we don't want you here. We're here for wrestling. And so it's sort of like you do that, and then you're trying to have him, you know, they figured, well, Miz will get you over as a babyface. And even Miz couldn't do it. So it was a miscalculation. But I'm also not super familiar with him other than once he appeared, I got a little familiar with him. And when they seemed like they're going to try to make him a good guy here, I was like, from what I hear, this isn't going to work. So, Robert, you have any insight?
Did you see? Oh, go ahead.
No, I don't have a lot to add. I interact with the Paul brothers once every 3 months when they're fighting an aged out MMA or boxing star. But I think the shtick is that they're like whatever the social media influencer version of a heel is. I think that's kind of what the Paul brothers do, and so the crowd tonight to me is like the social media version of like a Philadelphia crowd, where they know exactly what the role to play is, and they went completely all in on it.
Yeah, it was great. I think they showed it on TV. I could be wrong, but even prior to Paul coming out, they did a quick little segment with him hanging out backstage with the Viking Raiders, you know, trying to put him over.
Yeah.
But it did not work. I mean, you could almost, I don't know if you could see it on TV, but his face live, you could tell he was not expecting that.
No, and I'm surprised because I barely know him, yet I knew he'd get booed. Like, so you'd think he would know.
Yep.
It's like he doesn't realize, you know, like it's a shtick, people, and I'm famous, and it's a shtick, but I'm a nice dude. And it's like, well, we're buying your shtick. Get off our show.
Right, exactly. You know, a little side note to that. I haven't heard the Miz do "when my hand goes up" comment in quite some
time. It's been a while.
And he did it tonight.
I thought the
he
same
did
thing.
It tonight, yeah.
Totally.
That was fun. That
Yep. So, Josh, last question for you, and then I want to get to our other callers, and you can certainly throw anything in that we forgot to ask you about or didn't come up. But I just want to know, was there a match before Raw and was there a match after Raw?
You got it. There was not anything after Raw. Prior to Raw? Some main event tapings. I got that for you. I was able to get in there early. Keith Lee, beat a jobber, a local talent, somewhat quickly. Jeff Hardy beat Shelton Benjamin. Shelton Benjamin, for what it's worth, was showing face gestures, shaking hands with Hardy before and after the match. And the match that I thought would have been great for San Diego especially, and I love tag team wrestling, was the Lucha House Party, which I'm not a huge fan of, but I think San Diego would have popped for it because we are so close to Mexico, versus the Viking Raiders. And it was a great match, and I wish it was on Raw tonight.
Wait, that was after Raw went off the air?
No, all three of those matches were prior to the
Gotcha, okay. Air. I was going to say, that's a crazy match to have as, like, stick around fans for the dark match. So was there a dark match at the end?
No, there was not. No.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Cool. Is there anything – did the fans seem satisfied with Styles Riddle as the last match? Like, did it seem like, yeah, that was good. We like that. We feel we got a good show.
I think so. me personally, yeah. I was a little disappointed. You know, it is what it is. Riddle's got a lot of popularity right now. Obviously, AJ is going to put on a great match. So, you know, all in all, they did what they needed to do to send the crowd home happy.
That's weird. And when you're in San Diego, you're ending at 8 o'clock. You know, that seems like you do, you know, just do main event tapings afterwards or you know, have a dark match to so people hang out. So they just, yeah, I'm surprised with the early finish that they would, you know, not have a dark match afterwards.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anything else you want to bring up?
Yeah. One quick one for you. I like Alexis. Obviously they're going to probably start something with Charlotte. And I like how she came out just for a second and said, Lily and I just wanted to say hi. You know, short, to the point. It just means more. Just that one comment she said, I thought it was cool. Now, Alexis, you know, she's probably not the best wrestler. I think she might have injuries or concussions in the past, so I don't know how that feud will play out. But it was cool to see her come out, see that one line to Charlotte and walk back. I just thought it was I thought it worked. So
cool. All right. Josh, thanks. Great job. Really appreciate you taking time to share with us your experience in San Diego tonight.
Hey, Wade and Robert, I appreciate it, man. Keep up the great work. Love you guys over there. And everybody should go VIP.
Thanks. Appreciate it. All right. We appreciate the patience of our callers. My time's a little bit more limited. We're not going to be able to get to everybody on hold, so I'm letting you know that ahead of time. But I do see a 917 area code. Let's jump on that and tell us your name and where you're calling from. You're up next.
Hey, Wade. So I'm Valentino from New York, but currently living in Miami.
Cool. Thanks for calling. Yeah, what you think of Raw?
Yeah. Absolutely. I caught a little bit of Raw on and off. I saw Damian Priest, you know, in the opening, segment, and then I saw it turn into a tag team match. I'm glad that they started out with Bobby Lashley. I would have liked to have seen a little bit more of Bobby Lashley throughout the show, just because I don't know he's the WWE champion, and I don't know what Raw had to look forward to, you know, falling out of SummerSlam. Like it was really lackluster. Charlotte kicked ass at SummerSlam, so I went to SummerSlam. That was one of the matches that kind of like stole the show or like woke everybody back up. So it was nice to see Charlotte. I actually missed her segment tonight, but yeah, they didn't really have much to look forward to, is what I'm saying for Raw after SummerSlam.
What about Raw jumped out to you to prompt you to call otherwise?
You know what, Wade? I'm up late tonight, and I wanted to be on your show. I wanted to finally get in and make a call. It's been a long time. I'm not even kidding. I'm being 100% with you. Like I said, I went to SummerSlam. I've been to 11 yeah. WrestleManias, with the exception of the last two. So I'm
wow.
a fan.
Wow.
Big fan. But SummerSlam was a little long. Felt a little bit long. It's heartbreaking to say that just because of like, I was just super excited to be there. And then I'm just like, this is dragging a little bit. Unfortunately at times. Do you know what you anticipate, Bobby Lashley's next rivalry? I mean, I heard, you know, a little bit potentially Goldberg just because of the interactions he had with, you know, his son, anything else that might stand out?
Yeah. Just Damian Priest. I mean, they set that up tonight. So, you know, we're going to get Damian Priest Lashley and Goldberg Lashley. Those are going to be the next two. And I think at some point, and Robert, I'm curious, what do you think on this, that Lashley's going to be turning babyface. And I just, you know, there's a cool factor to him. And I think people want to cheer him.
Yeah.
And I think it's going to be harder and harder for babyfaces to get cheered against him because he is so dominant. And I eventually see a Lashley-Reigns match being a big match if they keep protecting Lashley and he turns babyface. So I think that's down the line. But if Lashley goes babyface, then, you know, you do have like a Karrion Kross who could have his moment in the main event as a heel opponent for him. Robert, your thoughts on that?
Yeah, there's definitely options, excuse me, that can be opened up when he turns face. And I'm with you. I think it's pretty inevitable because in all of his major feuds, there's, you know, the dreaded mixed reaction. And some of that might be on the baby faces that he's going up against, but some of that is just because they've done a really good job in investing in the character, putting him in good positions, putting him with a really good mouthpiece that complements the one weakness that's always been there in his game. So I just don't think there's any way around it. And if you look at the timing of it as well, Wade, I mean, it might be Survivor Series where it all culminates. That seems like, you know, last year we did Drew and Roman, and this year it's gonna be Lashley and Roman. And if you recall, their feud a couple years ago was terrible, but they did generally have really good matches when they matched up. So I think Bobby's in a good spot. I don't know how long it's all gonna last, because we often forget, because of the way he looks, that he's very much up there in age. So I think it's something that you have to do while the iron is hot. But yeah, I'm with you. I think by the time we get to WrestleMania, whatever position he's in, he's definitely a babyface.
Valentino, you said you are from New York, but in Miami now.
That's right. That's right. What up, Javier?
Are you going to the upcoming WWE Miami show?
So it's funny, because I heard that you don't have a correspondent for that show yet. Prior to SummerSlam, I got an email and I was like, oh man, I should go. It's so close to me, and the tickets are so reasonably priced. But then after SummerSlam, I just feel like I'm just gonna be there, just like waiting to leave. Like even in SummerSlam, like, you know, I went with my mom and my girlfriend who I go with, you know, to all of the events, and you know, I felt like we were almost counting down the matches until it was over. It was a shame. If I went to Raw, I'd probably go by myself, which I'm totally okay with. I've done that before, and it's fun to still go to the shows by yourself. But I'm not sure. I don't really have much to look forward to. I feel like I might even, you know, I would prefer to make the drive to Jacksonville. SmackDown seems a little bit more hot right now, but even that is just like, eh.
Yeah. All right, well, if you do, let us know, and we'd love to hear from you again.
For sure, Wade. The last thing that I will mention to you is I do think that they very strategically placed the advertisement for Crown Jewel right after Becky Lynch's return. I thought that was super strategic. Mm-hmm. I was watching SummerSlam back. I was watching it back today, and I remember when I was there, I remember, like, I was watching this commercial on the big screen, and it was just like, I was like, I don't know, this is just a commercial for like another show. I was barely paying attention to it. And then I saw Crown Jewel and I was like, oh, wait, what? No, boo.
How many boos were in the building when that happened? How many people noticed?
It wasn't much. It was a very subtle advertisement. You know, like people were so hot about Becky Lynch, which I wasn't a fan of that either. But Any word on what happened to Sasha?
No, it's being kept real private. I mean, I've heard speculation, but I'm not gonna speculate. I think that it falls under, you know, gossip and unconfirmed and private. But, you know, yeah. All right, cool. Sure. Valentino, thanks for calling. Yep. Call again next time you watch the show.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it, Wade. Yep. Thank you so much. Take care.
Absolutely. Yeah, you too. All right. Let's see. Yeah, I'm going to go to Javier now. Depending on how long that goes, we might get to another call. I want to sneak in a couple emails too, but like I said, my time's a little limited with the window I have. Javier, PW Torch VIP contributor, podcaster, and writer for PWTorch.com. Welcome to your segment. Wade Keller, Pro Wrestling Post. There you go. Sorry.
Anyways,
sorry, my name was on.
Hey,
it's supposed to be your mom. Good, kid.
I'm used to it. Hey, Robert, how's it going?
Hey, Javier. We got Miami back-to-back, so you better bring it.
Yeah. Although, you know what, to give him the entire Miami spotlight, I'll claim Hialeah for today.
There we go.
Which is where I actually live. Yeah.
You've been lying all this time.
Yeah. Yep.
Fraud.
I'm sorry, man. I'm sorry for all the people out there. I was thinking a little bit more negative on this show than you guys, but I think that's just residual from SummerSlam, which I would be one of the people who'd give it a. I was like thumbs in the middle, but then, you know, after it sunk, some stuff sunk in, it went thumbs down. the one of the things that they did in this today, one of the things I absolutely hate in matches, which was during the Miz Xavier Woods thing, where Miz fakes the knee injury and then the ref goes to stop the match, or stops Xavier Woods from getting to him and gets in his way, and when Miz attacks him, then. To make matters worse for me, Jimmy Smith says, oh, Xavier Woods shouldn't have put down his guard. When it was the ref who literally pushed, Xavier away from Miz.
Yeah.
You know.
They're trying to get creative, but they're confusing themselves.
And the thing is that it's something my brother and I were having a discussion on, which is the whole, rumors are that I've read is that Becky's maybe that the way that she won is to presage a heel turn. But like the thing is that every single time someone does something heelish, they're like, oh, they're just doing what they needed to do to win.
Yeah.
And they're saying that the good guys are the idiots for not doing it. The same thing with the Mansoor match, and it's being, and Graves is fine. I'm fine with Graves, because he's the heel commentator. He's got Saxon to, be the – but then you have the guy in the middle who's supposed to be, either impartial like Cole wants to be, but he still, does the whole support the heel thing way too often. But then Smith, him saying that just like that ticked me off. That was just, not cool.
I'm with you.
Although, to defend the there was one great line. Smith said, what was it? He said, when Miz was in the ring soaking up the booze. I was going to call him Burke. Smith said, no one soaks up the booze like Miz. And Graves replied, I do, but I do it differently.
Nice. Self-aware.
I got a kick of that one. Are we doing way too many of the Strange Bedfellow team, since it looks like that might be what they might be doing with Rhea by teaming up with Nikki?
I mean, it works. I mean, our first email up is on that topic. I think if they dragged it out, Rhea's like, I don't know this, Nikki. I don't trust, like if they just drag, I shouldn't have dragged it out. But if they tried to manufacture drama, but if they compacted the whole Orton Riddle saga, that has lasted, even if you subtract 7 weeks, lasted weeks and weeks and weeks, they compacted it into like 6 seconds. Like Rhea's like, get away from me. Well, you're not so bad after all. It was like a 7 second. Okay, we can do this. So, I mean, that's fine. I don't want them to do a whole storyline that has the same ups and downs as Riddle Orton, but I'm fine with Odd Couple tag teams. Just present them each differently. What do you think, Robert?
Yeah, I kind of rolled my eyes at it when it happened, and just purely, not that I wouldn't want to see them as a team or anything like that, just purely from the fact of, like, tonight's show is basically built around an Odd Couple tag team. So it seems a little bit lazy. If that's exactly where they're going. And as you said, like the way to get around that is they can just kind of be teaming together. They don't have to go through these weeks and weeks of getting to this point to either form or reform. I'm not sure where we landed on that earlier on, but that's I think the key to it. I do wonder though, if they are a team, like what's the point of it? Cause you're really going to just feud with Nia and Shayna every week, and it'll kind of be spinning their wheels, which would be a significant step down to where they were, 2 days ago.
And Vince McMahon is like, that's what we do. You must watch us, Robert.
And you must watch the same thing week after week.
Yes. Oh, I can't wait. I mean, we're going to get Nikki against Nia. We're going to get Nikki against Shayna. We're going to get Ripley against Shayna. We're going to get Ripley against Nia. We're going to get some 6-person tag maybe. I mean, it's going to be wild for the next 2 months.
Wow.
Yeah. Brace yourself. All right, Javi.
Well, and filtering and also Natalya and Tamina also, since I'm sure we'll be getting them wrestling both. Yeah, them and Knox and I don't even remember. I don't even care anymore. I'm sorry. Yeah, Shotzi, there we go. It's like, God. Oh, man. If they don't care, why should I? On the crossing, I saw the picture of Kevin Cross. You know, when Kevin Cross came out, I'm like, oh, my God, what are they doing? What are they doing to this guy? He's no longer in NXT. Why are we doing this? So I said, my brother's at work, so I sent him a picture, like, this is what they're doing to Cross now. And he actually brought up, he goes, did they just find some old Sultan gear lying around?
Yep, I saw social media references to that, and I was like, that's what it reminds me of, yep.
Yeah, I was like, because I think they're going for this whole Road Warrior, as in, you know, the actual Mel Brooks movie kind of vibe. Well, I guess that's what the Road Warriors are based on, too, anyway, so I take that back. But, you know, the whole Road Warrior thing, and it's like, you know, but it looks so low rent and cheap, and I'm like, cosplayers can make better suits than this.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just like, this literally looks like you went to Party City and picked up whatever they had, you know, on sale from last year's
and
Halloween.
And there was two choices, kid size and adult size. Like, one size fits all, or one size fits no one.
Don't we already have a Mad Max cosplay team, though, too? Like, isn't that what the Dijakovic and Madden are supposed to be?
I would trade, by the way, Dijakovic, throw Cross in with Dio, and have Dijak get the push that Cross is about to get. I mean, he's so much more prepared and better.
Uh-huh.
So
talent levels would be much more in line of where they're at.
Yeah.
I agree. Yeah.
I mean, honestly, Cross should be part of a badass tag team or kind of a mix-and-match tag team, but he shouldn't be a singles guy. I mean, his facial expressions are, you know, aimed at toddlers or little girls at haunted houses, and he doesn't take a lot of bumps. Just like, what is there? So, I don't know. Anyway. I mean, but in a tag team, he could be badass and get the hot tag and do a power slam and, yeah, so.
Yeah, this is the Cross thing I don't get, because I thoroughly enjoyed him in Impact.
Yeah.
I mean, he had more of, I think he also had more of an edge. He was called Killer Cross, and he came across that way. And I don't know if it's just, like, the size of the camera based, you know, since Impact is smaller. And when you change that into like a bigger, you know, to a bigger screen or how they film or their production, he just does not look impressive. Because I've always described him in Scarlet like a Boris Vallejo painting come to life, and I'm like all for that. But yeah, it's just there's something about the transition from, you know, that level to like the higher level that didn't make the transition. Don't know if it's totally his fault. Don't know if it's NXT's fault. Didn't prepare him, because early on stuff was actually pretty cool until he got injured. And then that kind of killed his old, you know, unstoppable monster mystique. But again, in this version of WWE, that doesn't exist either for the most part. But yeah, it's just, I feel bad. Cause I mean, I like the dude back in, on the Impact days.
Anything else, Javier, you want to sneak in? Like I said, I want to be a little more swift tonight.
Yeah. So just let me just look over real quick on which one I want to hit the most. Real quick, Damian Priest. What he said in Spanish should have been bleeped, probably. Called. He called Lashley a mountainous pile of shit. Is what he called him.
Okay.
That was I don't know how they, because you know some words have a little bit stronger meaning in a different language. So,
yeah.
The other thing was the Drew McIntyre, it just I keep feeling bad for him because it feels like he's in this thing as Goldberg's understudy. We don't have him, so we need someone, you know, here to take the role that, you know, Goldberg would have. In terms of like, you know, the extra body that we need for what we're going to be doing. So it just feels like I feel really bad for McIntyre I won't be talking to you on Friday. I'll be with PW Church Sage, Tyler Sage,
cool.
Rampage post show. So, But with the whole Bianca Belair thing, kind of like feels like she's going the same way as McIntyre did. This is like SummerSlam was like McIntyre's WrestleMania. So yeah, so just some random things. Oh, and the for the people who don't know, Logan Paul started off on Vine and he got a following, and he's kind of like a prankster kind of thing. You know, basically the same kind of like puerile stuff you'd find in like Jackass, that kind of thing. A little bit more heavy on the prank stuff. And he's had some controversies, a really big one. I won't go into detail. You can look it up there, you know, because, you know, trigger warnings are on that. But it was a trip they took to Japan to an infamous forest, Aoki Gahara Forest. He videotaped some stuff that shouldn't have been on YouTube, and then that got him in trouble. So he's basically one of those like Jackass guys, you know, kind of deals. So, you know, so that would be why, you know, some people are going to hate him. Some people like him. You know, some people love him. Some people love to hate him. One of those type of personalities.
Very good. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'll let you get home tonight. So have a good night, guys. Have a good one.
Yeah, nice. Thanks, Javier. Yep, you
sorry
too.
If I sound a little bit down. Sorry if I sound a little bit down because I'm dealing with allergies. So.
No, those are no fun.
Yeah. Yeah, have a good one.
All right, take care, Javier. All right. Wade Keller Podcast at pwtorch.com. is our email address, and Evan is up first. We'll kind of go rapid fire through emails here and wrap up. He says, while Ron General continues to be a joke week after week, I must admit I am hooked on anything Orton Riddle. Obviously WWE will play this out for a while, and then Orton eventually turn on Riddle, and Riddle will likely go over in their one-on-one feud. But my question is about the trajectory of Riddle. Where do you think they will eventually go from there? Is this one of those rare circumstances where WWE will skip the mid-card titles and throw them straight into an eventual WWE championship reign? I'm just glad, Robert, we're talking about that as a trajectory for Riddle, because he is, I mean, it looked like he was going to become a mid-card Miz Morrison-level comedy guy, and talent and charm and backing it up with ring skill took him on this journey where now it is a very logical question to ask, could he be world champion within the next year or so?
Yeah, and I think Orton's deserves quite a bit of credit in that process, because that's what was different. The character prior to him and Orton really clicking was, as you said, one of the things that makes you kind of not want to watch the show, because it was so great and so annoying and it didn't click, and it really took Orton to play off it. I think he definitely – even if you look at, you know, what's coming up in the Royal Rumble, he's a guy to watch, you know, what trajectory he's going to be on. I know there may be some PR hits that you may take along the way with putting him in that position. So there may be some hesitancy there. But, you know, as you know, we're getting calls about regrets that his music isn't playing at the end of Raw instead of Orton's, and I think all those things put together, pretty good sign that he's in a pretty good position, and a much better position now than he was when he debuted on the main roster.
All right. Up next, Zach said, last night felt like a funeral for NXT. Tonight felt like a funeral for the Raw Women's Division. The loss of Becky Lynch to SmackDown, a completely befuddling decision that soured me on the GOAT's return immediately, left the Raw Women's Division without its one hope for salvation. I thought maybe Becky would show up tonight, beat Charlotte, and be Becky Two Belts again, but nope. They're just going to let the division burn before our very eyes. The only thing they can do at this point is pull everything off TV for a few weeks and totally reset the division. Get rid of the hocus pocus crap with Alexa, let Nikki be Nikki Cross instead of this Captain Kangaroo character. Let Piper Niven be Piper Niven instead of that ridiculous name I refuse to use. Scrap Nia and Eva because they can't wrestle. Let Shayna Baszler and Rhea Ripley be the badasses that they naturally are and put Asuka on TV. Outside of that, there's no hope. with the NXT revamp, they can't depend on that as well for replenishments anymore, given that they've proudly embraced going back to their old talent development system. God help us if they relaunch another diva search, which I fear could be coming soon. The future looks really dire. Robert, your thought, by the way, I think, you know, Becky's on SmackDown for 2 months or whatever until the shakeup and does a little bit there. There's still a chance she ends up on Raw. I mean, there's things she's not long for, and nobody on Raw even is that long for the exact same mix that they're facing right now with the roster reshuffling coming up. So I throw that out there. If you don't like where it is now, you know, at least in a couple months, give or take, it'll be different, if not better and fresh. Robert, your thoughts on that?
Yeah, and that is a good point, especially where we are in the calendar, to not get too wedded to any of these pairings. I do think, though, it's one of our hobby horses is lamenting the Raw Women's Division. At least tonight, you finally had an opening of something slightly different with the Alexa and Charlotte impending feud. It wasn't this the same four women or five women that have been trading wins and losses for seemingly a year. I think now tonight obviously was, you know, the further integration of Alexa back into the women's division. I've always had a problem with the Alexa Charlotte matches. I just thought it kind of always came across as a little bit ridiculous. Not to say that every great wrestler has to be someone that's 6 foot tall or above. Certainly Todd will correct me on that if I have that assertion. But I think the distinction, I think even Todd will make the distinction, is you have to, you know, the wrestler themselves has to compensate for that size in different ways, whether it's Eddie Guerrero or Daniel Bryan or AJ Styles. They have to kind of chop down that tree. And I don't know if that she quite has that ability. So I do think there's some positives to her, but then she has to sort of drop elements of the Fiend character that she is bringing in. So I think this is a better night for the women's division, but as we talked about earlier, like the other members are just being locked in those same tag matches over and over again. And the NXT point, I think, is a really good one, because we've done a lot of lamenting about NXT over the last 3 weeks. And really, if you want to counter that, you say, what was the success of NXT? And this whole idea of women's wrestling being a thing in WWE really originated in NXT. And I think if there's any failures from the old developmental system, from the Laurinaitis era, it was the recruitment of the women's wrestlers that just really sticks out like a sore thumb. And it's such a running joke with the Johnny Yates thing. And if that is coming back, oh boy, are we in for some interesting stuff.
Absolutely. All right, John in Tennessee said, Karrion Kross looked ridiculous. He looked like the executioner from N64, WCW, NWO Revenge. I thought he would make a decent U.S. title level heel, but things just keep getting worse for him every week. The match got zero crowd reaction. What do you think is the plan for him, and any word on the status of Scarlett? I mean, all along, it's just Vince didn't want Scarlett part of the act. So, and I don't quite know why. Did you ever read anything or hear anything about, like, why he nixed Scarlett being with him?
No, I haven't. The only thing, my speculation is it's like a Lana Rusev thing.
Yeah,
You're like, well, what did he do? What would she be doing with him? Well, that's the only thing I can think of. That's pure speculation. I haven't read that anywhere.
Also, John said, also, did it sound to you guys like they pumped in crowd noise at certain times? The crowd sounded weird or wired for Drew's entrance. Weird, I guess he meant. And during the aftermath of Miz attacking Morrison. I didn't. I mean, it sounds like our outside correspondent said it was, you know, they were really into him. I don't think they are. I mean, I don't think they're. I mean, at Goldberg, you know, that's just been going on forever. They'll pump in Goldberg chants for, you know, at a certain point. But I don't think they are manipulating crowds. I don't think they have to. I mean, as in Target Center for SmackDown, I was, you know, trying to pay attention to it. And if they are, the crowd reactions, like the body language is matching. It's not like those occasions where there's a ton of noise, but nobody's actually doing anything or saying anything in the crowd, and it just looks really fake. So I don't think they are. Did it jump out to you at all, Robert? Did it seem natural?
I didn't think that Drew was getting as big of a pop as what I was seeing on Twitter as I was watching the show. I didn't think he was getting a negative reaction, but it didn't seem like this blowaway pop from when I was watching. I wonder if the miking has just been a little bit different since we came back. And so I think there's a bit of a disconnect there. And sometimes that explains it. Who knows? They might be trying different tactics. They haven't, you know, had to mic as many buildings with crowds in it in, you know, over a year. So I think there's something going on. I don't think it's, you know, Roman Reigns at WrestleMania 32 where they're piping in the cheers as he's getting massively booed sort of thing.
And John also says, at least they finally put some effort into these 24/7 segments. They're still ridiculous, but better than the Almighty Distraction Roll-Up. Thanks for all the great content over the weekend. Everyone, go VIP. We had a lot of great stuff over the weekend. I mentioned everything with Rich and me. We also had our SummerSlam post-show roundtable. We had a Wade Keller hotline last night where I went nearly an hour talking about CM Punk's Q&A with Tony Khan. Just went over everything they said and reacted to it, framed it, talked about what I thought made sense, what surprised me, what was left out, all that kind of stuff. So, and on and on. I mean, I'm just scratching the surface. It was a big weekend. It was hard to keep up with everything going on and to get everything posted from our team of podcasters. So, you know, go VIP, pwtorch.com/govip gives you access to everything. You don't have to listen to everything to get your money's worth, by the way. There's probably more than you'll have time to listen to, but you will never run out of choices that that give you the fix you're looking for. No pun intended. All right. He said the 24/7 title segments. Was that guy who ran out of the trailer in on it? Or did that just happen? Because I genuinely don't know. The way Corey Graves reacted, he made it seem like that was not planned. And they just filmed this thing somewhere. And this guy runs out shirtless out of his trailer because an ice cream truck's speeding away and there's all this noise. But I could just be, like, naive. What do you think?
Okay, so my theory is either, yes, it is a very unfortunate extra that, or a random passerby that got caught in that.
Oh,
or,
very, not unfortunate. Fortunate for us. That was hilarious.
Yes. Yes, fortunate for us. Yeah. Or this is Vince and Bruce just cracking themselves up about, you know, the stereotypes about an ice cream truck and who could be hanging around. Or like, it was an Easter egg that was for the audience of two or three. I don't think it'll be followed up on. I don't think we'll know anything about it. It's going to be one of those weird things that's a trivia question pretty soon. That was hilarious, especially the fact the way that it was, you know, usually WWE doesn't do subtlety. And so that when you have something that's kind of subtle in WWE, you always kind of take notice. But yes, I had several laughs off of that as it was happening.
Yeah, yeah, that was I mean, if there's a guy that's in his you know, camper or trailer, and they decide to film out there, and all this noise is going on, I could see it. And he looks over, and I mean, he sees R-Truth and Tozawa, you know, like in a trash can and dressed up as whatever, and I mean, arguing, and a camera's filming them, and he's had to think he like took someone slipped in some acid.
Yeah, the people who called the cops on Kevin Nash for throwing Rey Mysterio against the wall suddenly look very justified after that segment.
Yes. All right, we'll wrap up here with JD from Detroit. Usually, I don't have much positive to say about Raw, but tonight I'll give them credit where it's due. One, I liked how it looks as though Damian Priest was rewarded for his U.S. title win at SummerSlam and was seemingly moved up the card with interactions with Lashley, MVP, and McIntyre. Two, whatever happened, whatever the Miz Morrison-Paul segment was supposed to be, at least we can say that Stale Act is moving forward for better or worse. Three, I legitimately believe RK-Bro is an overact, and this could be the vehicle used to make Riddle into a true star if cards are played correctly. And four, I actually liked Charlotte Alexa coming next. It freshens up the stale women's division. And finally, five, is there any chance that Doudrop comes out of the Eva Marie feud any better than she debuted? I feel as though the story was told backwards and then accelerated to the end game in 1 week. As always, love the show, and everyone, go VIP. Thank you, JB. I think it's dangerous to have Doudrop go, I kind of like the name. Vince McMahon likes the name. Or, you know, Laurinaitis and Pritchard or whoever, they like the name. But to have a baby face accept a name that was given to her, that people – that was framed as disrespectful and demeaning and unserious, and have her say she likes it, could backfire. Is it even likely to backfire? Like, I think it could undercut what we're supposed to get out of her turn. And he's right, though. Storyline was backwards. You know, she saw Eva for who she was at the beginning, and then she just went along with the ride and then suddenly is no longer okay with it. And now she's kind of rationalizing, well, she helped me get my foot in the door. And it's like, well, I don't know, if you associate with a cheating jerk to get in the door, and now you want us to forgive you because you got in the door. I mean, I don't think that's a great story to tell. So I think they told the story terribly, and it was so easy to write. It's so easy to do this story. I mean, she's naive and in over her head, and you know in this world where Eva Marie's brought her in is manipulating her, and we get clues week after week that this isn't. You know, Doudrop is starting to, you know, see Eva for who she is and who we all see her as, and she's not comfortable with it, but she doesn't have the confidence to break away, and then finally she does. I mean, this just wasn't a hard story to tell. And then she says, and I'm not Doudrop, my name is blank. And it doesn't have to be Piper Niven, it can be something else that WWE wants control of. So I just think they did this wrong every step of the way, either really wrong or just slightly wrong in a way that's sort of unforgivable.
I more have just a problem with the pacing. I think the concept is actually a little bit fresh where she's not Nikki Cross. She's not so naive about everyone taking advantage of her. So I didn't mind that as much, although I think the pacing was just way too accelerated, which I think is kind of a similar point to what you're making.
Yeah.
Like they had dissension like the second week. And so that kind of put out any intrigue to the storytelling right away. And the Doudrop embracing it can go either way. I don't think it's as egregious as Shorty G and embracing the name Shorty G.
Right.
I think that is like the peak of that. But at the same time, it's not endearing. It's specifically insulting. I was, you know, on Urban Dictionary tonight because I figured we were talking about that. Like, what the hell does that actually mean? And I'm thinking like, oh, okay. Well, that answers that. And let's face it, her actual name or her gimmick name is a really cool name. So it would be kind of a shame to actually not use that long term. I hope she doesn't stick with that because, again, as you were saying, it's something that Vince finds entertaining, has that vibe of, or whoever finds it entertaining, that sort of, yeah, you're going to be bullied and you're going to like it kind of mentality that they put over on WWE. And then, which by proxy just makes their small S or little S superstars, look like dopes whenever they embrace those sort of things.
All right. Very good. Robert, tell people they can follow you on social media and, we plugged your show at the top, but find it, people, at PW Torch on your podcast app.
Yeah, and if you want to interact with me on social media, you can find me on Twitter, Robert Vallejos, at Rob M. Vallejos, RobMVallejos. If WWE pay-per-views continue to be on Saturday nights, my Twitter feed will be much more interesting on Saturday nights than it usually is on Sunday nights. Also, you can send an email to our show. I know JB from Detroit is a fairly regular emailer to the show, and that email address is MMALivecast@gmail.com, MMALiveCast@gmail.com. It is an open inbox in every sense of the word in that we take questions of wrestling, obviously, MMA, boxing, entertainment, movies. We've never taken a book question, but that would be pretty awesome. music, kind of the full spectrum. And usually if it's appropriate for the show, we will just get into it on the show because it's kind of the vibe of our show. And, of course, the show every Monday night as part of the Daily Cast lineup, myself and Rick Monsey, MMA Talk for Pro Wrestling Fans.
And I think you hit on something with the PW Torch Daily Cast. It's generally pairs of hosts or three hosts, and it's not just about the topic. It's also just about getting to know the hosts and chatting about life. And there's the core thread, but like, you know, Mike and Andrew, I mean, my God, the things they talk about and it is not always on topic, and there's rants and there's sidebars. Same thing with Ryan and Tyler on ROH. And so anyway, yeah, it's just fun hanging out with some people who share common interests, but it's not strictly adhering only to the topic that's on the logo. So they just kind of keep you company and you're going to hear from people who share similar interests, but you get to hear about other things too.
That is till next week when I get the email from you, Wade, saying stay on topic. So
yeah, no, I would never do that. All right, cool. Thank you, everybody, for joining us tonight. I'll be by later in the week with more shows. So keep hitting refresh. Keep checking us out. And, go VIP, pwtorch.com/goVIP. This is a tremendous time to roll the dice, take a chance, and treat yourself to all the benefits that come with that. And I think you'll be surprised at how much there is and not only coming at you every day that's new, but the unmatched library and how you can just lose yourself on our site we've been building for 18 years now that has been adding backlog content going back more than 3 decades. So there's some real cool gems and rabbit holes you can fall down that you'll be glad you did. So when you're wasting your time hitting refresh on Instagram or Twitter, just think about what you could be doing instead and go VIP. Follow me on Twitter at TheWadeKeller and follow our brand at PW Torch. We'll talk to you guys next time.